Nuketown Radioactive number 77 for Wednesday, April 8th, 2009. On this episode of Nuketown Radioactive, Neutron Lad gives up diapers for good, Stargirl and I get in a game of Settlers of Catan, I head back to the gym, yet again, and set some goals, and I share my reviews of a bunch of new games, including Resident Evil 5, Star Ocean, and Ticket to Ride. Pod fade? I think not. Well, folks, welcome to Nuketown Radioactive, the, well, admittedly infrequent podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. I'm your host, Ken Newquist, and, whew, what a wild ride of a spring. I can't say that anything particularly spectacular has happened. No new babies. Well, not yet. My sister's due any day now, though. no new jobs, nothing like that, but it has been crazy. There has been so much work to do. I've been working on this truly massive project at work where I'm collaborating with, I think six other colleges in doing usability testing on Moodle, which is this open source learning management system. It's kind of like Blackboard. I've rambled on about it in the past. But in any case, I'm working with a bunch of other schools on this project, and we're doing usability testing, and we're going to be using the results of that testing to do improvements to Moodle and reporting back our findings to Moodle Core, coming up with our own code stuff. And it's really cool, and it's really great, and it's a lot of extra work. So I think that's probably the number one reason why my podcasting has kind of fallen by the wayside over the last couple of weeks. But there has been a lot of good news, too, on the family front. The first one is Neutron Lad has given up diapers for good. That is right. He has decided that he really doesn't need to wear diapers anymore. Now, I think I talked about this on a podcast not too long ago. Well, actually, let me restate that. I talked about this on a long ago podcast since the last one that came out was in February. But the cool thing is that, I think the last time I spoke about this, I think Neutron Lad had been kind of toying with it. You know, he kind of woke up one day and said, hey, I'm going to go on the potty. Well, now it's pretty consistent. We don't really have a lot of accidents. Accidents are very far and few between, which is awesome. And he's been using the upstairs potty, the downstairs potty. We've got a few idiosyncrasies, but for the most part, it's been going really well. So the good news is he's mostly potty trained and not even three yet, which is really cool. The bad news, that would be the soft footfall of an almost preschooler walking through the house at night. He'll get up at midnight because he needs to go potty, which again, of course, is awesome, right? Because he's not peeing in the bed. But, you're almost asleep. You're just drifting off to, Never Never Land. And then you hear like the little teeny tiny creaking of a little person up out of his bed and walking down the hallway. He doesn't really cry out at all. He just comes and gets us. On occasion, he has gotten up maybe at like 5:30 in the morning and tried to use the potty himself. And he usually kind of ends up having some problems with that. Trying to get out of the footy pajamas can be a bit of a challenge with the lights off. I don't know that I could pull it off. I know he certainly has trouble with it. And, he needs to get the stool in place and all that. So, that's the only downside, which is hardly a downside at all, right? I mean, I will definitely take getting woken up at midnight or 5 a.m. or whatever over peeing in the bed or diapers. So that's the really big news on the family front. Now, I guess I should explain the whole Neutron Lad thing. Those of you who follow me on Twitter would already know this, but when I talk about my kids on Twitter, I generally use a code name. And Lucas, my son's code name is Neutron Lad, and Jordan, my daughter, her code name is Stargirl. And I've just kind of carried it over into Nuketown, partly because I think there's a bit of a disconnect with people because, they're hearing me talking about my kids on Twitter. And then they come into Nuketown and don't exactly know who's who, right? Although I guess you could probably infer it based on, based on Neutron Lad and Stargirl, right? I don't think you're going to get confused as to who's who. But in any case, I just thought, you know, I would just carry it over on into Nuketown. And the other thing is, you know, it adds an extra little bit of obscurity for their names. So anyway, I've decided to start using it on Nuketown, and that's why I'm using it in the podcast too. Now, talking about Stargirl, she and I got to do a first, which is Settlers of Catan. She's been doing really, really good in kindergarten, and she's mastered counting to 20, and she has also figured out math. She's been doing basic addition, so she can add like 5 and 1 or 6 and 2, and most of the time get the right number, or pretty much all the time get a right number, especially if she uses her fingers, right? So here's the thing, if you can count to 12, and more importantly, if you can add 6 and 6 and come up with 12, that means that you can roll 2 dice and add up the numbers, and now we've got a whole new world of games that we can play, and one of those games is Settlers of Catan, which is really a fun game that I really enjoy playing with my friends, and it's really cool to be able to play it with Jordan. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, Settlers of Catan is a European-style board game, and the idea is that you've got this island, and on the island there are a bunch of hexes, and each of these hexes is associated with a number, which has a probability of coming up when you roll 2d6. So, for example, if you roll, sixes and eights are the most common numbers because they're the most common numbers you can get by rolling when you roll two dice. 11 and 12 are the most uncommon numbers because they're the hardest to get when you're rolling two dice. Whenever that number comes up on a hex, whatever that hex is produces something. So for example, if you had a 6 that was on a forest hex, it would produce wood. And if you had an 8 that was on a pasture hex, that would produce wool from the sheep that are on the hex. So in any case, the idea is you're producing resources. You then use these resources to build things and you trade with other people. Stargirl hasn't nailed the more strategic aspects of the game just yet, but she gets all the underlying game mechanics. And I think really, once she has been able to play it a couple of times, she's going to start to get a feel for how the game actually plays and what the real goals are and how she can use these resources to buy stuff. And then, you know, what the advantages are of building a town on a hex that is more likely to produce the resources that she needs in order to win the game. So we had a lot of fun with it, and I'm really looking forward to playing more of it as we get into, you know, the late spring and summer months. So as I mentioned in the intro, I'm back to the gym again. I always seem to fall off the wagon with regards to the gym right around late January, February, and there's a pretty good reason for that. And it's this: the kids are driving Sue insane. You know, when you're in the heart of winter, it's very difficult for the kids to go outside, especially if it hasn't snowed. You know, if it's just really, really cold, there's not a lot for them to do outside. Sue can't send them outside. And as a result, you know, she's trapped inside with them all day. And while she loves the kids and she loves hanging out with the kids and doing stuff with the kids, I mean, you can only stand being around another person for so long, right? So as a result, I tend to bug out of work and skip the gym. And even though, you know, I could theoretically go back to the gym, you know, after dinner and the kids are in bed and all that, it just never really happens. It takes a lot of willpower to get back out of the house again and go out into the cold, go to the gym, and, you know, it just doesn't happen. So usually in January and February, I kind of fall off the exercise wagon, but I'm back on it again and I'm enjoying it. You know, the thing that I'm noticing when I have these breaks and go into the gym is that it's really easy to slip back into my old routine where, you know, I go to the gym once and then I instantly want to go back to the gym the next day. It really kind of, I don't know, ignites something in my brain that I just want to do that. I don't know if it's the endorphins or whatever that are being released by the exercise, but, you know, it's really easy to slip back into that groove. And that's kind of a cool thing. You know, that certainly was never the case when I was younger. And it's nice to know that some things are getting better as I get older. On the weight front, I'm currently 209 pounds. And this is also kind of a good thing. When I was at my, low point as far as weight would go, or high point, well, whatever, physical low point. I was at, I think, 224 pounds, maybe 225, something like that. And for the most part, even though I haven't really been exercising heavily during the winter, I've been able to keep the weight down, and mostly because I haven't been drinking a boatload of Mountain Dew. You know, I might have a soda a day, that kind of thing. Whereas prior to starting the whole exercise regime, I might have drunk, I don't know, 3, maybe 4 sodas a day, and it makes just a huge difference. Now, I'm certainly not at the point where I had been, where I was down to like 195 pounds, and, you know, I'd like to get back there at some point, but it's kind of cool that I've changed my diet and kind of my routine enough that even when I'm not exercising, I'm able to kind of keep my weight lower than it had been, and it didn't just balloon right back up to where I'd been before. Now, one thing that's been really cool about exercising right now, and that I found a real motivator for getting back to the gym, is watching Alias on my iPod. I've been watching Alias when I go to the gym. I got season 1 for Christmas, and it's been really, really cool. It turns out that, you know, the kind of the techno tracks they have with Alias work really, really well for exercising at the gym, because you kind of have your natural adrenaline moments where, you know, Sydney is off doing super spy stuff, and then you kind of have the lulls in the action where you can kind of slow down a bit, and it complements my workout perfectly. And I really enjoyed Alias season 1. Season 2 slightly less so, but both of these seasons were really good, and they've been providing me with a great deal of motivation for getting back to the gym. So I'm back. I'm hoping to stay back. And my goal right now, well, I'm actually going to try and set a hard goal for myself. And that goal is to be at 200 pounds by April 30th. So that would be, let's see, 9 pounds in about 6 weeks, which I don't know if that's reasonable or not, but, you know, we'll see. At the very least, maybe May 15th at the outside. But I'd really like to try and lose some more weight before we get into the summer months. If nothing else, not even the weight, just kind of get back into that exercise regime, especially since things have been so busy in the spring. I think the other big reason why I fall off the exercise wagon is because I get so busy at work that it's like it's just easy to push off, right? You know, it's 4:30 or 5 o'clock. I really should be heading down to the gym, but instead I'm, you know, putting the final nails into this project that I'm working on. And then the next thing you know, it's really time to be heading home instead of going to the gym. And I think it's important that I kind of establish those parameters for myself as I head into the really busy time of the semester, so that I don't make, you know, I don't cut those corners, that I really do go to the gym and just keep things going. And even more importantly than the weight is just to make sure that I do that exercise, because ultimately I sleep better, I feel better, and maybe the most important thing is that I'm actually able to keep up with my kids better, because, you know, at 3 and 6, they are really hard to keep up with. So if you're a fan of the podcast, you know that I spend a goodly amount of time reviewing video games, actually reviewing a variety of games, and that has been what I've been doing this spring. Probably be another reason why I haven't been able to podcast as much, because I have been reviewing a lot of games. Some of the ones that I've reviewed recently are Resident Evil 5. I just reviewed that for SciFiWire.com, which is the new kind of daily news site, review site for sci-fi.com. And Resident Evil 5, I don't know, it wasn't quite what I was expecting it to be. I haven't played Resident Evil in a while. I mean, I played the games when it was on the PlayStation 2, and then I kind of fell out of the franchise. And with Resident Evil 5, they've gone with a different perspective. You're now doing kind of like an over-the-shoulder kind of perspective, and you're also kind of doing this run-and-gun thing. Actually, more like run-and-then-gun, or run-stop-then-gun, because you're unlike a first-person shooter or your general shooter games. Resident Evil forces you to stop if you want to shoot the zombies, and it's a bit of a disconnect. I mean, it kind of goes against my my shooter reflexes, but I think it's cool because it is forcing you to stop and, you know, evaluate the zombie horde that's rushing towards you, and it does give you kind of that horror movie feel to the game. Very different from say Left 4 Dead, where you're Where there, the horror is coming from this overwhelming zombie horde that's chasing you. With Resident Evil, you still have the zombie horde, but you know you have to kind of like manage your time resources. You have to get far enough ahead of them that you can take off some pot shots, and you always have to kind of be aware of where they are. The other thing that's really different about this game is that, like I say, it's more about managing your time and managing your partner who is along for the ride and helping you investigate the zombie menace in Africa. Then it's more about that than it is about managing resources such as bullets. You know, in Resident Evil 2, I can remember counting every last bullet and wondering if I would have enough bullets to get to the police station, right? In this game, you have 1,000 bullets. I mean, you're shooting fruit, which is unheard of in earlier Resident Evil games. Well, maybe not Resident Evil 4, but the point is that the kind of, you know, scarcity mechanic of the earlier games that created the tension has now given way to this, I have to make sure my partner is okay tension. And for my part, I liked it. I thought it was a good, I think it was a good change. It's much more in keeping with the Resident Evil movies than necessarily the earlier games in the franchise, but I think it's a good move, and it really keeps things fresh. Another game that I played recently was Star Ocean. Again, my review of this is up on Sci-Fi Wire. And Star Ocean is a Japanese role-playing game, and it's really very true to that particular genre. So if you're familiar with the whole anime, manga kind of thing, you know, big eyes, small mouth, it's got all of the tropes that you would expect from a Japanese role-playing game. So you've got this, you know, precocious child who for some reason tags along with your adventuring party and wields infinite cosmic power. You've got the 18-year-old leader who has, you know, hero worship issues. He's got his sidekick girl who he grew up with and is now, you know, his second in command on a starship. So very much a Japanese role-playing game, but I had fun with it. It's got a real-time combat system that I thought was cool and a nice change from the turn-based stuff that you normally get in a Japanese role-playing game. And while it is entirely immersed in that particular genre, and I think I had a lot of fun with it. And I think if you like these kind of games, you're probably going to enjoy Star Ocean. If you don't like these kind of games, then you're probably not going to like Star Ocean. Now, another game that I've been playing kind of as a break between these action shooters and RPGs and stuff that I've been reviewing for Sci-Fi Wire was Ticket to Ride, which is an Xbox Live version of the board game. I played this once with my friends, and or rather the conventional board game version of this with my friends. I liked it a lot. I don't want to get too much into exactly how Ticket to Ride plays, but basically the idea is you're trying to complete different train routes across the continental United States. And if the person who completes the most routes and scores the most points while completing those routes wins the game. The port for Xbox Live, very loyal to the board game. My friends and I played it online on a couple of snow days when our regular Friday game day got snowed out, and we had a lot of fun with it. I mean, like I say, very true to the board game and very easy to play online. A much better port of a board game than, say, the Xbox Live version of Settlers of Catan. And with a lot of expansions. There's actually two expansions. There's another one for the United States, which introduces, I'm trying to remember exactly what it's called, but in any case, I think it's like Big Cities or 1910. I think it's 1910. Introduces some new routes, some new scoring mechanics, and there's also a European version, which was also very cool. Now, on the role-playing game front, I have recently reviewed the Clone Wars campaign guide for GameCrier.com, which is my new writing gig. I had a good time reviewing this particular campaign guide. I've actually reviewed a bunch of them now for Game Crier. And the thing I liked about this campaign guide, which really surprised me, was how applicable it was to other campaign settings. So, for example, I run a Knights of the Old Republic game for my gaming group, and I can easily see taking the mass combat rules, the squad rules, and the follower rules from Clone Wars and porting them right back to the Knights of the Old Republic, particularly as my gaming group enters the time periods of the Mandalorian Wars and the Jedi Civil Wars. So, you know, I kind of went into the Clone Wars thinking, I'm not really a big fan of the prequels. I don't know if I'm really going to like this campaign guide. And I came out of it going, this is awesome. I mean, it's basically like a military campaign guide, or a military campaign resource, I guess you could call it. In any case, if you're running a Star Wars game and you want to be able to do things like mass combat, you really got to pick up the Clone Wars campaign guide.
A cowboy on the run to keep his soul. A vampire running a Nigerian investor scam. A wolf racing to the mountaintop before a dragon can catch and kill him. A human protecting one of the aliens he fought in war from his old army buddy. Meet these and other heroes and villains in Serving Worlds, the genre-blending podcast fiction collection by John Miro. For more information, visit johnmiro.com. That's johnmiero.com. Weekly episodes are 20 minutes or less, but beware, there be cliffhangers here.
In Netheads this week, I have two things I wanted to talk about. The first is Launchy, which is an open source fast application launcher for Windows. Now, a long time ago on the podcast, I talked about Quicksilver for the Mac. And the idea of Quicksilver is that you hit a quick key, a window pops up, you type in the application you want, and boom, it launches. You can actually do a lot more with it than that, but at its most basic, that is what Quicksilver does. And my friends and I at work have just basically become Quicksilver devotees. We've put it onto every machine that we have access to, and it really just transforms the way that you work on a Mac, because you know, you don't have to really worry about what's on your dock. You don't really have to worry about your desktop or how to get to applications folders, because as long as you know the name of the app, you can just type it into Quicksilver and boom, the thing launches. Now, I've been doing a lot of stuff on Windows recently. I installed a Windows partition on my MacBook Pro, and I've been paying the household bills using Quicken for Windows. I actually just took over that responsibilities from my wife earlier this spring. So I've been spending a lot of time in Windows. And the thing that kills me being in Windows is I didn't really have anything like Quicksilver. I didn't have a fast application launcher where I could just, you know, hit the Alt key twice and boom, I can launch Firefox or something. Launchy allows me to do that. Now, it's not quite as versatile as Quicksilver. I don't have the ability to custom define libraries. I don't have the ability to tell it specifically what keys I want to use to do the quick launch, but you know, I'll take something over nothing. This has been very nice. It's really helped with my productivity on Windows, and you know, the quicker I can be done with Windows, the happier I am. So you can check this out at www.launchy.net. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about was a column that was up at Tor.com, which asked the question, are comic books dying? Heather Massey speculates on the demise of comic books as we know them. And, you know, she's basically talking about things like comic books are really expensive nowadays. I mean, you're looking at spending between $3 and $4 for a comic book. And honestly, when I got into this hobby, it was 75 cents for a comic book. It quickly jumped up to a dollar when I was in high school, but you know, still, that was fairly reasonable. It's getting harder and harder to justify going to the comic book store, getting my comic book pull, and you know, dropping $20 on comic books and only getting a handful of comics. The appeal of a graphic novel or of a trade paperback, you know, is growing. You know, I can stick it on my bookshelf. It'll be easier to lend to my friends. It'll be easier to share with my kids when they get older. And I find myself kind of every month going, is this the month where I should just give up on my monthly pull or my weekly pull and switch over to graphic novels? You know, just kind of bite the bullet and wait for the books to come out in graphic novel format. And, well, I don't know. I mean, it hasn't happened so far. But, you know, as time goes on, you know, I think we're all kind of evaluating our expenses in these troubled times. And comic books are something that's kind of easy to cut, especially if I can switch to another format that's going to be a little bit cheaper for me and just a little bit easier to manage in the house, you know, just easier to keep track of. The thing that she brings up is, you know, is the future of comic books digital? You know, does it make more sense to have like a $5 or a $10 monthly subscription to a website like Marvel and read your comic books online. Now, the thing for me, though, is that, well, I can understand the appeal of this. I hate reading comic books in digital format. I think it's difficult to read them on your laptop. You can almost never fit the whole comic on your laptop because they're taller than the screen is. And it's just not very comfortable for me. You know, I want to have that book in my hands, or I want to be able to view a full panel, or rather a full page, at one time. Now, here's my thinking on this, though. There's been a lot of speculation that Apple could be coming out with an iBook, which would be a tablet form computer. And as I've geeked out about before, I would love, absolutely love, to have an iTablet. Even though I already have a MacBook Pro, I would turn around and buy an iBook in a second, because if it's got the form factor I want, which is, say, about 8x10, maybe even like 8x6, whatever, as long as you can fit the majority of a page on it, I can easily see this being an excellent resource for reading PDFs. I would love to be able to read game PDFs on an iBook like this. But even more importantly is for comic books, because I could easily see having a subscription if I could read it in a tablet format, because the tablet is just going to lend itself to comics. I could even see Marvel adapting their format to fit an iBook style format. And here's the thing, I think that there's a lot of excitement about netbooks and the form factor of a netbook, but the thing is that a netbook is just a cheap laptop. It's not really changing the game, okay? You know, it's okay to be able to go out and do web browsing and maybe a little bit of light word processing, but I see a tablet computer, a really, really good tablet computer, as really transforming things, about being able to access information in ways that you don't normally access it, and to be able to really make things like an ebook comfortable for most people to be able to read. Now, the Kindle's nice. I haven't actually seen one up front, but you know, my friends rave about them, and I've certainly seen the form factor. And while I see the appeal, I want it for things like comic books. I want it for things like gaming PDFs. I want it for things like normal books. I think we're at the point now where you can get a really nice resolution out of a portable LCD screen. And, you know, this could be the thing that really revitalizes comic books, or at least makes them more appealing and more affordable for a wider audience. So I guess what I'm saying is that I think that comic books themselves are going to be undergoing a transformation over the next year or two as the price of books just keeps going up. And I think that the iTablet or the iBook or whatever you want to call it could ultimately be the salvation for comic books, because you know, you want to have that monthly hit to be able to get the individual issues out. You know, that's kind of what the model is for comics. And going to an e-format with an actual attractive readable format for the book, you know, that's just a godsend. That allows you to keep track, you know, basically keep the form factor you had before in terms of the layout of a comic book, and yet at the same time still be able to compile these things into a graphic novel, so the people who want the physical book will be able to do it. Now, will I be sad to see comic books go? Yeah, I really would be sad to see comic books go. But, you know, again, given a choice between no comic books or comic books in a form factor that I can easily read on my computer, you know, I'll take the latter every time.
In the Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy, author J.C. Hutchins sent you underground to a secret human cloning factory. You clawed your way to the surface. You survived. Prepare to head into hell again. Welcome to Brinkville Psychiatric Hospital, the setting for Hutchins' next novel, the supernatural thriller, Personal Effects, Dark Art. It's a rotten place with a bloody history. 9 stories of howling madness built inside an abandoned brownstone quarry. Locals call it the Brink. And now, J.C. Hutchins and creator Jordan Weissman are opening the doors of their bloody creation before the book's June bookstore debut. But you're not getting a guided tour of the Brink. You're being committed. Become a part of publishing history by admitting yourself to the Brink and becoming a patient of art therapist Zach Taylor. Inject yourself into the personal effects universe. Create a patient profile. Receive your admittance papers. Contribute artwork. And earn the insanely cool privilege to appear on Brinkvale Psychiatric's official website. Find your first art assignment now at jchutchins.net/thebrink. Fill out your patient paperwork, submit your art, and come back for more assignments. Get creative. Get crazy. Get committed. Go to jchutchins.net/thebrink for more information, or visit jchutchins.net/personal effects to learn more about the book. Coming this June.
That will do it for this edition of Nuketown Radioactive. I went a little bit long, but you know, hey, it's been a while, right? I had a lot to catch up. As always, I'm looking for feedback on the show. You can send it to me at nuketown@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter. My username there is NukeHavoc. And finally, you can stop by the website at nuketown.com. Thanks, and I'll be talking to you soon.